Good morning. My name is Carolyn Ford. I'm going to be making this presentation on some post-tsunami activities and wanted to maybe begin by paying some homage to those who lost their lives. And as I go through these slides, you'll see that there's some pretty devastating numbers that are attached with this. I was living in Thailand at the time of the tsunami on a sabbatical teaching public health at the College of Public Health at Chulalongkorn University. And with my son, who was living with me, it had turned 10 at the time, we were due to be on an island that actually was devastated in the tsunami. And so I feel that since it was not my destiny to die, my destiny was to do something that would help to reconstruct and rebuild in the aftermath. So given that we're going to be really on a short time frame, I really apologize. I'm going to have to be the California person that I was born as and talk fast. And this would not be the Thai way. So just a little bit of geography so you can see the placement of where Thailand is. And I am only going to be focusing on the country of Thailand for the purposes of this presentation. And I'm just going to move over here real quick to show you something. So if you go all the way down to the very last island, that's actually where our project is. And I'm going to explain in a minute why we chose that particular area. The magnitude was a 9 on the Richter scale, coming off the western coast of Sumatra. These are the countries that were affected. Currently, the estimation is 275,000 people died in the tsunami. These are the statistics for Thailand. And what's important to note in the first column of the deaths in particular, that unknown has to do really with people that are undocumented workers that are in Thailand. So from Burma, Cambodia, and other parts of South Pacific or Southeast Asia, foreign statistics relate to those other countries that were present. And in Thailand in particular, during the tsunami, you may have remembered that heavily populated with tourists at the time of year that the tsunami hit. So there were 40 countries engaged with having lost people. And so that prompted quite a lot of exceptional responses that had to be done in terms of language translations. And then families that were separated, lost passports, how to deal with an emergency in a foreign country. So you can kind of extrapolate emergency preparedness magnified in a very different way of what had to happen in this country. So in looking at how we came to some conclusions, and this was a collaborative with the Chulalongkorn University College of Public Health, immediately following the tsunami, there was quite a lot of response about how to help, and many people were engaged in trying to give money and clothing and blood, anything that could immediately help. What we looked at in particular was that in this first bullet, that the College of Public Health at that time was only 10 years old. So the graduates had only come out probably about 7 years previous to that, the first level of graduates. So there was a lot of faculty contact with graduates, and indeed the district health officer was currently getting his master's degree at the time of the tsunami. And so we had kind of a good base of people to talk to, and we called immediately to find out what their needs were, and from there the project developed and grew. We looked at this particular island because it would not be a priority of the Thai government for reconstituting some of the services. It sustained less damage and loss of life. The economics, as in terms of what contributed to tourism, which would get the economy back on an economic recovery, just weren't in place. And it was manageable. We had people on the ground, both on the mainland and on the island, in terms of public health. So we knew that we had contact with the community. These are our primary objectives of the project, was rebuilding and renovating houses, looking at rebuilding and repairing fishing boats and fishing equipment, looking at building a shipyard repair facility, that would provide some vocational opportunities in the community, providing child support for affected families. And then on the mainland, looking at constructing a patient triage area. There were so many triages brought into the mainland, it completely overwhelmed the system at the hospital, and they definitely needed to do some upgrades. So these are just a couple quick slides on a couple days post-tsunami at the Thai Red Cross, starting to collect provisions, and dump trucks full of donated items kept arriving every minute, practically, it seemed. Sorting clothes, and one of the things I would point out for anybody who's been in an emergency situation that I found really redeeming about what was happening with the Red Cross, you never thought that bundling clothes was going to be important, but it is, because in other emergencies what happened is clothing would just get brought into an affected area and just dumped in a schoolyard. And there was no sorting as to men, women, children, ages, you know, gender. And so it all of a sudden made really good sense about bundling those appropriate for the area, and then tossing things like shoes, which, you know, you only need flip-flops, especially when you're in a water-infected area. And so these kinds of activities became very important. No, that's just my son and I. And the badges there, you came in and you just signed your name in, what language affiliation you were, and then you were just kind of led to a group to start working. A lot of what was happening in the immediate days of the tsunami was body identification, and a friend of mine that was working with a team with medical students, they actually wound up having to go back a second time and re-identify bodies. They had to pull them out of some of the mass graves and re-identify because some misidentification had happened. And so there were a lot of very bizarre stories happening in the country about how to retrieve after effects, what was happening with cremation, because you're in a Buddhist country. There were significant issues going on at the time. I guess I could look down here, not try to look that way. One of the things that with this particular project we did very quickly was a rapid assessment of the damage so that we could start to outline where indeed we were going to fundraise, how quickly we needed to mobilize resources, and what were the priorities going to be in terms of the objectives for the project. So these are just a few slides regarding the island. One of the things I'll make a comment about why this area maybe didn't get as hard hit, you see the couple islands out there in the background. Well, in southern Thailand, there's thousands of islands. And what happened with the tsunami waves, there were three that came in. Those islands actually broke the force of the water. So as it was moving from Sumatra over the Krabi and Phi Island and some of the areas at the more northern part were hit full force. And as the wave and the water volume started moving down the coast, it was broken by those islands. And so that's why when the assessment teams went in that very first slide about where damages were, that's one of the reasons why that didn't happen. But I've also read quite a lot about how there was just the bizarre thing about when the wave comes in, why something at this location versus a couple hundred meters away didn't get hit anywhere near in volume the way this other area did. So I guess it's just the intricacies of how those waves happen. So these are this is actually in the area that we started doing some of the rebuilding, and this. The comment I'll make about the house construction, we initially, on our first assessment, came up with 21 homes that we were going to begin with. And then we came to understand cultural politics. And there was quite a lot of discord amongst the Muslims and the Buddhists about whose homes were going to be higher up on the priority list. So as this project developed, we wound up doing only one home reconstruction and focused our attention more on the health facilities because the local politics were not good. And for anybody who's followed anything about post-tsunami, what happened a lot in these kind of island communities were issues with land rights. And so many people are what are called sea gypsies. They live along the coast. Their families may stay there full time, but the men are fishermen and they're out to sea maybe 8 months out of the year. And there wasn't good documentation or titling about property. So trying to actually get rebuilding done was really complicated because of those kind of land rights issues. And that still goes on today, and especially in Banda Aceh and some other places in Indonesia. So this is the home that was targeted basically for reconstruction. You can kind of see it wasn't in good shape to begin with. So unfortunately, when you're building on sand, it's not a good foundation. This is the owner there on your left. And a couple interior shots, pre-planning on supplies. We recruited some medical students, which was fascinating to work with because these medical students came from the South, and most of them basically came from families where they had maids and had not done any manual labor in their lives. And so watching them dig and work with rebar, things like that, it was really entertaining, actually. This is quite a lot of fun stuff going on during the rebuilding. So this is us all staked out and digging the foundations. Everything had to be done by hand, as you can see. That's the whatever the piece of equipment would be for pounding. It was a big piece of wood. So this is the completed house, which occurred over a course of months, but the house was complete by the time I had made three trips back now, and so within a year it had actually been completely reconstructed. So this is the owner's wife, there's the owner. They never smile for the picture and the interior. One of the things we wound up doing with this project, it was a very rigorous public health project, since you're basically working with a School of Public Health faculty. Everyone is very conscientious about making sure you employed all the appropriate survey techniques, but we did have continuous community assessment of those priorities. This particular shot, I threw in a couple just to show you something, but see this louvered wall back there? Well, during the course of when I was there about 6 months later, it was during monsoon season, and it looked too dicey to go out by boat to the island. But the islanders are used to living on water, so they came in. Well, that wall was missing within 2 hours of this meeting. I mean, this monsoon came through, and it just wiped out where we were staying. I mean, I hadn't been in a monsoon yet. I'd been living in Thailand and had, you know, walked through a lot of monsoon water and rain, but had not actually been in a facility where it was blowing through and taking out walls. This is the community that we supported. These two children are currently still in school. We've been supporting them for about 3 years now. The mother, herself, she had lost her husband and was wanting to open up a sweets shop, and so we did a lot of work with her about how to do some training with understanding finances of running a business, as well as the local things that needed to be done in terms of her being able to work out of her home. Just a snapshot of how difficult life is. She would be cutting rubber, getting up at 4 a.m. and cutting rubber for 2 or 3 hours in the morning, then coming home and getting her children ready to go to school, would be preparing her coconut and items for selling sweets, do that in the afternoon, and then go back to cutting rubber for 3 or 4 hours in the evenings. So using a drill bit, this is basically how she would extract coconut. That's her cooking surface. And then what she was currently doing, using a donated cart from Coca-Cola, was being able to go through the village and sell her wares on that. So this is her about 2.5 years later. She's on the far right with her two children and some of her family members. The children, what I came to understand even after talking to them through a translator multiple times, I didn't know until this last year that they actually were physically with their father in the water when the tsunami wave was coming in, and he literally threw his children to somebody to try to get them ashore, and he was carried out to sea. So I never knew that they actually were standing with him at the time that the tsunami came in. And fishing boat repairs is still a very collaborative project. This is just a slide to show, and actually it goes down further to show a lot of different collaborations. Fishing obviously is primary industry out on the islands, and one of the things that we found is that there was only one person on the island who actually could do repairs. And so that led to a part of the project that we were trying to do is vocational training for others on the island to learn that particular trade. When we were there working on fishing boat repair, we were approached a number of times, typical of this particular villager, asking to help them develop a cooperative for pond fishing. They no longer wanted to be on the ocean. They were very fearful. And one of the things that's happened in many of the Southeast Asian countries, that fish being a normal part of the diet is no longer, that there was a lot of belief that the bodies that were lost at sea were fed on by fish, and people would no longer eat fish after that. So that's really been a significant problem in getting people back on the diet and on the industry that supported them. So the health center, we did quite a few things with the health center. These are just a couple pictures of what it looked like. Our public health nurse, quite the fascinating person. The day I walked back to the island last year, they had done their very first delivery in the evening with electricity, and we were responsible for getting solar panels to the clinic so they could store vaccines and have radio communication and computer access. And so she was just beside herself with delight. I can't imagine what life is at night trying to do any kind of emergency care. So these are some of the new features: medical records, computer workstation, pharmacy. Those are the panels, the battery packs. And what would happen before is they only would have one to two exam rooms that were upstairs, so the elderly were really having trouble going upstairs. So what happened, as you can see under the clinic, is that completely encasing of the bottom floor and making that the patient care area. Mainland Hospital, these are just going to be some shots of the reconstruction. We built a new triage area for the facility. This is the newly renovated hospital. This was a partnership. We had about 20% of our funds that were engaged in this part of the project. So we wanted one thing very firmly from the very beginning, was to have this project go back to the local community, to make sure that it was in their hands and in their control. And so to help that process along, we actually had a ceremony in November of 06 to provide an award and the public health officer to engage back with the community and put it back in their hands and help them finish the final priorities. We had a little bit of money left to spend, and then for them to designate a new body of individuals to see the project to the end. So that's me presenting the award back over. And all the bright yellow that you see is in honor of the king's 60th anniversary on the throne. So yellow was the chosen color. So you'll see a lot of yellow. But this was the award that we gave. That's one of the community meeting to go over the purpose of the project and find the volunteers to finish it. Real Delphi process, you know, get those needs documented and get a vote on what was going to happen. There's our last group of elected volunteers. And so our outcomes, that we were able to actually move the physical site of the clinic from the top story to the bottom, making it more accessible. The hospital has now set up monthly outreach clinics for chronic disease management in the patients, and otherwise they would have to travel by boat, which is costly to them, and as well in time. They're now setting up wellness clinics, and I really thought that this was interesting that in the last set of priorities, they really wanted exercise equipment. That was one of their priorities, and I kept thinking, well, you know, those exercise bikes are going to rust, and, you know, how is this going to really work? But interestingly, that last bullet came to me about 24 hours ago from Thailand. So they were saying, no, this is one of our outcomes, that they're going to have regular these aerobics classes, and, you know, the elderly really do want to get engaged in a physical program out there. So they've kept that as part of the project. The solar panels have allowed 24-hour service. Suturing at night has been a huge issue, to either do it in darkness or by flashlight. So having electricity now has made a huge difference, as well as vaccine storage, as I said. They now have been able to increase from 2 to 4 people being stationed out there, and a lot because with electricity and computer access for records monitoring, that's made a difference in how people actually want to work and sustain. Still, there's needs. There's always goats, right? If you're liberal, you know, there's always a goat. Well, we still don't have electricity out to the fishing boat repair place. We know where we can jump off of a line that the Japanese built, but we haven't been able to fund that. That's Ishmael, who's the boat builder, and you can see the facility in back of him. He wants to have another repair dock there, and that's still in disarray, and we're still trying to do some fundraising for that. There are still homes that are devastated and need to be fixed. The tsunami warning system is in place now. And this is what you see all over the island, as well as on the mainland, all down the coastal areas. It'll show you exactly where you need to evacuate to. And you'll find these evacuation maps. This one is on the island. And it's even got English on it, which was really exciting. the marker for where the wave came in, so marking a moment in time. Return to the industry is still compromised and will continue to be so. I don't know that anyone can do much about that. Mental health issues are still significant on the island. Children with lots of nightmares. When I was there about 6 months after, there had been already 1,000 aftershocks, and so people never knew whether or not that meant an earthquake with a tsunami or what that really meant. And those of you from California, you know how you live with an earthquake and what it feels like, but these were rare occurrences in this part of the world. And I think just, again, everything that's connected with the fishing industry and living on an island, the tsunami brings up quite a few other issues. And thank you very much.